Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Any longer? This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. If you visit the New York Botanical Garden from now until September, you might notice something different. Walking up to the conservatory lawn, you'll see sculptures of birds placed among summer snapdragons, zinnias, and orange Mexican sunflowers. A lot of birds. There are more than 400 sculptures of vultures. Inside, you'll see glass sculptures like a massive peacock with a tail made up of more flowers. All of this and more is the result of the artist Ebony G. Patterson's year-long immersive residency with the New York Botanical Garden, the first ever for a visual artist within the space. Patterson was born in Jamaica and lives and works between her home country and Chicago. Up in the Bronx for this residency, she's got the opportunity to explore the Botanical Garden's extensive collections. The show is called Things Come to Thrive in the Shedding, in the Molting, and it's on view now until September 17th. Ebony G. Patterson was recently awarded the David C. Driscoll Prize in recognition for her contributions to the field of African American art, and Ebony joins me now. Ebony, welcome to the show.
Hi, Olson. Thanks so much for having me.
When this project was first proposed to you, this immersive year-long residency with the Botanical Garden, how was it described to you, and what made you say yes?
It was first described to me as it was, we could do whatever you want, whatever you want, whatever you want. We could do whatever you want. Then I had a panic attack, and then they had to give me some space. and it came back a few months later after I after having a conversation with my my gallerist, Monique Melosh, who runs Monique Melosh Gallery in Chicago. Who said to me, Ebony, I don't think you understand what's being offered here. And she said this because I'm so used to making everything myself. So the notion of having a team of people, an institution to work with to realize something at the time when the opportunity was put forward to me, just I think just seemed really overwhelming. But as I took some time after the initial proposal to kind of imagine what could be possible, it became much easier to unfold.
As you began to observe the space and the environment of the New York Botanical Garden, what questions did you begin to ask yourself? What did you notice about the environment that you knew you might want to respond to?
Well, so there were multiple trips, you know, so I came, when they had the Burley Marx show, which is a Brazilian, artist and landscape designer. And so it was interesting to come and see that show and to see what was possible. And I remember learning at the time, In the show, they had these like massive palm trees, and it was explained to me that the trees were borrowed from another institution. And I was like, "What do you mean the trees were borrowed?" So to think about a botanical gardens also having a kind of similar operation to an art museum was something that I also learned in that moment, that there is a network within, you know, across institutions, and sometimes these institutions have collections, and sometimes these collections are shared. Of course, borrowing a tree, I also understood, was an incredibly delicate and challenging process to uproot a tree from where it was to bring it to a whole other location. It required multiple, a lot of steps. But then I came also too during the install of Yayo Kusama's exhibition, and seeing there also too as somebody who has a studio practice as an artist, how did that then also become a part of the landscape, or what conversations existed between the work that Kusama makes and the environs of the gardens. But I think it was after the Burley Marx show that that really set afoot a couple of questions for me. So whenever I'm home in Jamaica for really long stints. And for the last number of years leading up to that particular visit, I think it was in 2019, every time I would go home, maybe for like the last the 3 years prior, I would always go to the botanical gardens at home. It was a space I grew up going to as a child. There's also the zoo that's attached to it. So it's the Hope Botanical Gardens. But for some reason, post my visit at the botanical, the New York Botanical Gardens, when I went home that summer, I went home visiting the gardens with very different eyes and a very different set of questions. And that was spurred in part by my visit to the gardens and also to the gardens in the Bronx, but also too because I had just come off of a residency at the Crystal Bridges in Bentonville, Arkansas, where I was busy in studio making works, thinking about botanical illustrations and the relationship that that had historically to a period of exploration and plunder and exploitation. And also, too, during the course of the residency, I planted like a small test garden. Mm-hmm. With this idea in mind that the garden was meant, it was meant to be a garden that was meant to die. So thinking about it, the garden as this kind of as a metaphor for a post-colonial state. And also thinking about plants in relation to the same way that a lot of bodies that ended up being, you know, on this side of the hemisphere that didn't have a choice. So too did the plants not have many plants didn't have a choice in the way they arrived. When, you know, Black bodies traveled in slave ships in the bottom of the ships, plants were carried up top. So when I went back home that summer of 2019, it was difficult then, I guess, having had these questions through the residency and then by extension visiting the gardens immediately after the residency, going home to the Hope Botanical Gardens, which was, came out of a colonial project. During our colonial period, it also made me ask the question about what was here. It wasn't even something that I thought about. And there's nothing on the property anywhere that spurs this question, that indicates its history in any way. And I found that also, too, when I visited the New York Botanical Gardens, I was asking those questions before I'd gone home. I was asking what was here, you know? And it's also not strange for us, I guess, in some ways, thinking about what gardens are and what they do and thinking about what they are in relation, and thinking also, too, about public gardens in relation to city spaces, you know? They're meant to be sites of like leisure and relaxation and the escape of beauty, you know. So the notion of thinking about the garden as a site that holds history of horror is not something that I think that we generally consider. So I felt like what would it mean to peel back those layers, to almost think about the garden almost as if it was a rug, a rug as an embellishment on the floor, and what would happen if we would just pick up its corner. I remember Glissant had written a statement that, you know, the landscape in relation to the Caribbean, that the landscape is our only monument. But I think that that is also applicable to any post-colonial space, that there is truth in that, that the landscape, that in between all of the leaves, below all of the roots in the soil, that all of the truth of all the life and evidence of life lived and all of the trauma is held in the soil, and that to find that truth, one has to go in between it all.
My guest is Ebony G. Patterson. She's the artist who has the first, she's the first visual artist to have a residency with the New York Botanical Garden. Her exhibition is called Things Come to Thrive in the Shedding and the Molting. It's on view at the garden until September 17th. I want to describe for people, as you arrive outside the conservatory, there are these 400 vultures. I read this, so please correct me if I'm wrong, Ebony, sure. Made of high-density foam, and they're sort of dotted around the garden. When did you first become interested in vultures as a concept in this exhibition?
Yeah, so I tend to come to things in, I feel like sometimes in the middle of the night, you know, I go down this weird... So, I mean, in my, there were a couple of like earlier wall-based works that I had used. I was trying to find ways to use birds or use other, other elements beyond the figure, which was so central in the work, to, I guess, broaden the narrative or to broaden the possible readings of the work. And to think about the use of, birds or other kinds of animals that may pop up as, you know, as a metaphor. So sometimes there are snakes that pop in. There's some earlier works where I use like, I use owls as a metaphor for witnessing, but then also like complicating the relationship of owls, but thinking about them in relation to like the four horsemen of the apocalypse. So I went down this weird well one night, just wondering if I could, because I was so preoccupied with metaphors that related to death, I thought like, oh, could I find a vulture? So I was looking for a ready-made, and then serendipitously found a ready-made vulture, but it was described as a bald eagle. And trust me, Allison, there was no mistaking this. It was a vulture. It was not. Another site described the very same form as a vulture. So, but these are like, it was like a garden, like decorative garden, ornaments. It's also really intriguing, that whole other world of what people use to decorate their gardens. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I was working on a piece in the studio, at the time that was really centered a lot around women's bodies. As I've gone into thinking more about the garden, I've found that, you know, like the relationship between the garden is feminine. And so I'd also been thinking about this notion of like men die, women cry, thinking about the notion of witnessing when we think about like social, like communal violence in a lot of working class communities. Women often become the voices for the deceased. And then I was also thinking about this notion of like, what's the difference between the sound of a wail and the sound of a lament? And so I was thinking through like, you know, like when you come into the world, you come through a woman's body and that is signaled by a wail, you know, so a woman's voice signals that you've entered the world. But then also when you exit, that sound is also signaled. A sound is also signaled by a woman, but it's a lament. It's a bawling, it's the crying. And so I was thinking about all of these points of passages and how that also relates to the garden, thinking about women's bodies in that relationship. So in this one work, I had these three female presenting figures, and from behind we were seeing them from behind, so it was almost as if we were witnessing them witnessing something else, but between the audience and these the images of these women were about 9 vultures, and so the gathering of vultures for consumption is called a wake. And so when we also think about what it means to, when we think about burial or the funerary, the wake is what happens when, you know, like in, like say for example, in my own traditions growing up in Jamaica, the wake is what happens, you know, before the funeral. It becomes like a period of extended celebration. You know, it's a sitting in community, but as it relates to this body that has passed on, it's a period of mourning, or it relates to the acts of mourning. And so I was just thinking that, you know, these women, these three women, in some ways also to, I guess in some ways also echoed a kind of, you know, like art historical reference around the three Marys, you know, the three Marys. And then also too, I guess it also seemed biblical. Mm-hmm. The three Marys who turn up at Christ's tomb, you know, they all mm-hmm. showed up for love. You know, these women who come to tell us about their loved ones when there's a shooting or when there's violence that's happened yeah. in the community. They come to tell us yeah. publicly, they also show up as an act of love.
Yes.
And so I was thinking about the vultures in the same way, that the vultures show up as an act of love for the land.
And people can see them at the New York Botanical Gardens. My guest has been Ebony G. Patterson. Ebony, thank you for sharing your practice with us.
No worries.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.